Good morning. Good morning, listening audience. You know what time it is. 0900 Sunday morning. WJNI 106.3 on the FM dial. And we're here in Charleston, South Carolina, live in the studios again. WJNI 106.3. It is Sunday morning. It's a pleasure always. I look forward to it every week. I'm hoping everyone has had a good week. Time must get the show on the road. Got some good guests for you today as well. And that's always important to bring somebody to you that you want to hear from or that got valuable information to share with us. I want to always thank my sponsors for what they do and for them allowing me. And anytime you go, I mention these sponsors' name, you go in those establishments, you should say thank you. Thank you for allowing Jay Wright to have this Sunday morning voice and this platform to bring these information to us every week. Those sponsors, Ask You Paint and Body Shop, Dorothy's Funeral Home, Johnson's Funeral Home. Those two has been in business over hundreds of years. And, you know, they've been in the funeral industry forever. And if, you know, in your time of need, contact them. Dorothy Funeral Home, Johnson Hall Funeral Home, Gyrus Place, Charlotte, North Carolina, F. Brisbane Mortuary Transport, Hannibal's Kitchen, the new Family Seafood Market on Rivers Avenue, VIP Bistro, 616 Meeting Street. Those sponsors allow me to come to the airwaves Sunday morning and bring you valuable information or just some good dialogue. So thank them. Saturdays, 1 p.m., the David Mack Show. David's a legend in the radio world, been around for, I don't know, I think David's been around for a couple thousand years, it seemed like. 1 p.m. Saturday, tune in. David has always given you information, and we try to, between David and his sons, we're on this course to we giving you valuable information on the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. WJNI 106.3, tune in to both shows. I want to jump right in, and as I always do, you know the format where the goal is to build bridges and close gaps on the Jay Wright Show. The call-in number, 843-308-9564, 843-308-9564. I know you got a lot to say. You're always talking. I'm always talking. Let's load the lines up and let's have this strong conversation. I want to thank with me today the professor, T-Bass, in the studio with me today. So, you know, anything I'm going to engage in, you know I'm going to refer to that dude. So, thank you, the professor, T-Bass. Somebody asked me the other day, they says, why do you call him professor? I'm like, this dude has, like, long tenure in the industry, and he has brought a lot of people on as a result of his years in the business. And then I didn't know about the whole Charleston Southern piece, you know, so I kind of was validating the professor thing.
I actually was professor, yeah. I think I'm going to go back one day.
No, you're right.
Shout out to Dr. Peak.
That's listen, you're doing professor work right here in this industry, man, and I thank you because I'm learning from you, so I appreciate you. I want to talk about something that's going on, and I know you want to talk about it too. It's the hate crime bill. Hate crime bill. There's a hate crime bill that's dated June 2020. It was established in response to the Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia. Think about Georgia now. It used to be a red state for all these years. Just establish a hate crime bill. South Carolina, we have some accountability issues. And here is what I am asking of you, the listening audience, 843-308-9564. We got some accountability issues. Is it more important to legislate a woman's body or address public safety issues? Which is more important? Now, we just saw the legislation of a woman's body. But right here, we have what is now the commercialized Emmanuel 9. And in response to Ahmaud Arbery, you do realize that if what happened to him happened to you off of Dorchester Road or trolley road or whatever, and you were gunned down in the same manner, it would not be considered a hate crime. We have to demand better from our elected officials. And if you're one of those elected officials out there that's fighting for this bill, I salute you. I applaud you. Because we cannot, one thing we cannot do, and I know factually, is we cannot legislate somebody's heart. If hate's in your heart, it's going to be in your heart. We can't legislate that. However, we can put in place public safety measures that that may or may prevent you, give some consideration to whether or not you want to commit that crime. But we have something in common with two other states. Those two other states are, I think it was, I believe the two states was Wyoming and Arkansas, if I'm not mistaken. But I'll confirm that. And if you're out there listening, you tell me what those two other states are. But we have a commonality with those two states. Only three states left in America that does not have a hate crime bill. And we are, those two other states are, that's what we share. We share that in common. And is that something more that we need to demand from our elected officials? We've got to demand more. We've got to ask for more. I want your thoughts on that. I also would like to, you know, I want to talk about something I think that's very near and dear to me. And, you know, something I think that has changed society, and it took value, a valuable tool that I thought better prepared us, young people, for life. And that is the discussion I want to have with you, my listening audience, and I need your feedback and your input. I want all my educators out there that's listening to call up, because when did we change the education curriculum and stop teaching social and civics in school? Did the decline less prepare students to become informed citizens? Well, I'm going to draw back to a study in 2016, and it indicates that 1 in 4 people are unable to even name the three branches of government. So I want to hear from some of my educators. What happened when we decided that social and civics, we wanted to pull that away from our educational curriculum? Was that good? And why did we do it? A lot of studies indicate that we are not, that it had factors, that pulling it away has created some of what we see. Now, however, what I would say is there was some I guess, an added value to some of this, because right after, in 2019, I saw another study. And again, these are studies that I look at because I want to make sure I try to bring as much information to you as possible, is that in 2019, there was a study that indicated that 17% of America trusted the government. That's 56 million people. But I'm going to come back to that number. Caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome, WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Rice Show.
Hey, Mr. J. Rice, the first question I want to answer to is, why do the government have to tell me I have to have an abortion? That's the first one. This is my body. You don't tell me how to do my body. The hate crime. Don't pass no bill saying I hate you, because you know what? If you say you love the Lord and hate your brother or your sister, then you're lying. You're lying. And it gets to the point about the Republicans and some of the Democrats that I just don't like how they trying to do us. And when we talk to them, they represent us. We hire them. How come we can't fire them? That's all I got to say this morning. You have a blessed Sunday.
Well, thank you, ma'am, for your call. And I do want to thank you for calling in. And you're right. They should not be legislating your body. Hate crime bill would be a tool because we can't legislate a heart. We can't, you know, we can talk about a heartbeat, but we can't legislate a heart. If your heart is cruel and you're evil and you you don't like a person because of the color of his skin or their religion, whatever, we cannot legislate that. So that's going to be there. Sometimes we're going to have to just kind of physically get that out of some people. But nonetheless, thank you for calling in, and you're right. You're very right. So I want to know when did we pull social civics out? Okay, when we look at it, I say there was a trend of it returning, but the Smith-Hughes Act of 1917 was the law that authorized federal funding for vocational education. The Smith-Hughes Act of 1917, that was the law that authorized federal funding for vocational education. And the law was described as preparation for careers, not requiring bachelor's degree. So now, if those findings were of value, what happened? And by the late 90s, vocational education had a major image problem. And it seemed like it became this dumping ground for the kids that were not doing well in the traditional academic settings. Well, not every kid is military. Not every kid is college material. So now, what happened? Where did we go wrong there? I want to hear from you. Social civics, trade. We took it away from the curriculum. And there is some opportunity to bring it back. And I think there is, there've been some, but what happened to that society when we took it out? I was talking about numbers earlier, about 17%. And this is not my numbers. These are numbers I read in the research. 17% of people don't trust Washington, D.C. If 17% of people don't trust Washington, D.C., that's roughly about 56 million people. But I'm going to tell you something about that 56 million people. In the last election, we had over 150 million people that voted. So 17% of America, and according to their numbers, not Johnny Wright numbers, not Jay Wright numbers, if 17% of America don't trust Washington, D.C., and we had 150 million voted the last election, then, you know, that's good. That's really good for a distrust. And so voting is key, and holding our elected officials key to where we need to move forward. Public safety is an issue. So what do we do here in South Carolina? Call your elected officials. You know their number. If you don't know their number, we need to make sure we get that information to you. So you can call them, and you can ask them why one was more important than the other. There's a debate over this $15 an hour. And, you know, other than a small percentage of America, when was the last time you were given a cost of living increase? Think about that. I'd like your thoughts on that as well. Social civics. Why did we take it out? Why did we pull trade from our schools? That's on the table. 843-308-9564. That's on the table to discuss. But as well, the debate over the $15 an hour. When was the last time you were given a cost of living increase? And you and I both know eggs, milk, taxes, constantly going up. So how do we address that issue? Do we need to start raising our voice in regards to the living increase? Because are you one that's affected by that? Well, let me get right on to the phone. I got my guest on the line. Good morning, Mr. Register of Deed, Mike Miller. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm good, and yourself?
I'm well, man. Thank you, sir, for taking your time out of your busy, busy schedule, man, to get on with me this morning. It is a pleasure, number one, to have you on with me in WJNI 106.3, the Jay Rice Show. It is a credit for me. And I thank you for your time. Mike, let's talk about that huge election, that historical election that you that you mounted a couple years ago to hold the seat as registered deeds. Let's talk about that. And let's talk about Mike Miller.
Okay. As you said, you know, that election in 2018 was really, really paramount for a lot of different reasons. In terms of race, obviously, me being the first African-American elected to that position in Charleston County in 238 years is really historic in a lot of ways. And I didn't do that myself. I didn't put myself in that position. Voters voted me in, and so you have to be appreciative of people wanting you to serve in that capacity and to do a good job and to represent them. I found out also that I'm the first Black elected registered deeds in the state of South Carolina, not just Charleston. And so it's really a huge deal. The registered deeds office is one of those offices where people just don't really know much about it. It's on every four-year cycle, but typically people just don't really know much about the office. And so one of the things I've been trying to do and have been kind of stalemated because of COVID, unfortunately, was to really make this office front and center, right? Mm-hmm. For everybody who's a homeowner or anybody who's attached to property, so you know what this office is, what it means, its significance, and how it can help you at some point. So, yeah.
Well, I guarantee, based on, you know, some of your previous community work as well as some of the other elected roles that you've previously held, you have no problem with transparency and being out there. I know you think you look good, and so I know you would do not mind creating some transparency in that office so people can get a chance to know more about it. So I know COVID has created that problem for you, Mike, and I, as you indicated, do not think that there's a lot of people that even know what your role is. So I wonder, in your previous election, I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to ask, did your run probably, would you agree, bring some attention to the registered deeds office?
Oh, I think you did a lot. I think maybe for several reasons. One, just because of what you said earlier, because, you know, some of the work that I've been doing in the community with being on the school board and even before that, with, you know, my community organizations and providing free school supplies to kids, people often wondered, well, Michael, what exactly is this office? and I'll be honest with you, John, some people voted for me and didn't even know what the office was.
Right.
They came to me and said, Mike, look, if you're running, you my man, I'm going to vote for you, and you can tell me about that office later, but I'm going to vote for you. And so I'm appreciative of that too, but on a much larger scale, imagine how many people vote in elections. And we either vote for people who we don't know, or we put people in offices that we don't know what these offices really do. And I tried to take a little litmus test of people who really knew what the office was. And so I would sit in the barbershop and I would ask, I made a habit for like 3-4 weeks to ask every single person who came through the barbershop. You ever heard of it? Now, the first thing I would ask them is, do you own property? Mm-hmm. And if they said yes, okay, fine. And if they said no, I would say, well, are you in some way attached to property through heirs property, which, of course, John, everybody is, right?
Right, right.
And I'd say, well, have you ever heard of the Office of Registered Deeds? And they said, no, I've never heard of it. And then I would then try to start a conversation about exactly what the office is. And 99% of my clients have never heard of it.
Yeah.
Which really is, I don't know if that's a testament that the previous people in the office never really made it important for people to know, or it's just one of those things that just kind of flies under the radar and you don't know it unless you need to know it. And so I really wanted to bring some visibility to it. And I think maybe just because I'm in the office, I may have done that unintentionally. I may have been able to do that just getting elected to the office.
Well, I think that's, you know, that's my point. And I think it's huge that you have that ability now to bring some attention to that office. And, you know, you can only imagine a non-property owner would never, ever, really may ever not even know what a registered deeds is, like you indicated. Oftentimes, as you indicated as well, that if your heir's property, it only until someone dies that you have to have maybe some interaction with the deeds office. Mike, I can appreciate you being there, man, because I think it says a lot about, you know, where we're going. And 230 years is a long time to have a formation and have never had somebody that looks like you to serve in that office. So I think that's inspiring for the future. What is the Register of Deeds office, and what do they do?
So in a nutshell, without getting too into the weeds, my office is the library of every piece of every document that ties someone to land, okay? So imagine Charleston County as a whole. Every acre of Charleston County, any document attached to that acre or that parcel of land is recorded in my office for perpetuity. So where you live currently, if you've been in your home for 100 years and you wanted to research who was the first home, who was the first person who owned that land, my office is where you would go to get that information. So when you sell your house, it's recorded in my office. When you refi your house, it's recorded in my office. If you satisfy your loan and you pay your home off, it's recorded in my office. And so these documents are hugely important to homeowners. And I ask people when I talk to them, when was the last time you checked the deed on your house? Most people never check it.
Right.
Most people don't look at it until they buy their home, when you sign all those documents and they tell you to, John, sign your name. Mm-hmm. Sign your name here.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the first of two, five pages, your name's probably pretty legible. But then toward the end of those documents, you're just scribbling your name.
Right.
Another thing I try to educate people on is in our office, by the state standard, we record the document based on your signature line, which is, John, the way you sign your name.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if you sign your name in a way that is not legible, and then the next phase we go to, if we can't see it, if we can't read your name, we go to the printed version of your name.
Mm-hmm.
But John, let me ask this. When you bought your home, if you're a homeowner, and you started signing your name on all those 30, 40 pages, did you ever check to see if your name was spelled correctly on those documents? You probably didn't, did you?
Mike, you're right. I mean, you're hitting on some heavy points here, man. And a lot of people are kind of scratching their head right now. So keep on, Mike. I'm listening.
So imagine if you signed your name in a way I couldn't read it. And let's just say that your name was spelled incorrectly by your closing attorney and a real estate agent. When you were to come into my office to try to find your property, John, you might have issues trying to find it.
Right.
Now, luckily, we index it more than just your name. We use your name. We use the address. We use the TMS numbers. So there are other ways of identifying your property. But just imagine how many people sign their name and they scribble. And imagine how that helps or hurts us to index your property. So my office is hugely important to every owner in Charleston County.
Well, I tell you again, like I said, there's a lot of people scratching their head right now thinking about how when they signed those documents and how they signed, just based on this conversation. And as small as a detail that is, but how valuable and important of a detail that is as well. So, Mike, you know, I want to make sure as well is, if you can, why is it important and critical, this office to landowners? Why is it?
Well, one, John, I've realized that the most valuable asset that people have is their land.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so any documentation that ties you to your land ties you to potential wealth.
Okay.
Oftentimes people use their property to refi it, take the interest out of their property. Maybe they want to do some renovations on their property. Maybe they want to start a business.
Mm-hmm.
So those documents are crucial to not only you maintaining your property, but also crucial to you passing your property down the generation to your children and your children's children. And so anything that ties you to your property is going to be important and it's going to be valuable. And that's why this office is so critical to homeowners.
Well, you tell, you know, that's valuable education. And, you know, one of the things that, and particularly in the black community, since I've come home in 2013, I've realized that a lot of the black communities are land rich. And, you know, we have land that we should be based on, as I talked about, increased, how the cost of living is increasing, that we need to be looking at livability, how we use those lands, how we use our land to continue to afford to live in the Charleston area, in the peninsula area, period. And that's something that we've talked about quite a bit. And, you know, Mike, I want to ask you, because I know, you know, this is before your time, but, you know, back in 2013 when I first came home, and in a community which, you know, I grew up in, Rembus Point community in Mount Pleasant, it was brought to my attention. I wasn't sure. It was brought to my attention about some dual taxation. And so I immediately wasn't sure what the person was referring to. You know, I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, yeah, there was an issue with dual taxation. And after a little research and the factual tax document, I realized that there were some validity to it. So, of course, now, you know, since 2013, I've spoken extensively with Charleston County Council and, you know, the Treasurer's Office, Auditor's Office to address and to fix some of these issues. So we are making headway there. But that was an issue that I didn't even realize could have possibly even been real.
That's correct. I mean, it was brought to my attention when I got this position, that, and it was brought to my attention by County Council Member Anna Johnson.
Absolutely, Anna Johnson.
And then brought to me by Peter Techtenberg and Mary Tinker, who are Auditor and Treasurer of Charleston County, and when they've been able to identify properties for some reason or another, John, have been taxed twice.
Right.
It isn't a whole lot of properties that fall into that category, but there are
mm-hmm.
some.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you and I both know that people oftentimes lose their property due to delinquent taxes.
Right, right.
And we've all heard the horror stories of people losing their property because somebody just couldn't afford to pay it or somebody forgot to pay it.
Mm-hmm.
And valuable pieces of land have been lost and then acquired by someone else due to property tax mm-hmm. or due to delinquent property taxes. So double taxation is definitely an issue. I don't know exactly where the county is right now in looking at and addressing those concerns, but I have been a part of those conversations, yes.
Well, Mike, you know, that's a value in itself to have you in that position and to be able to speak to this subject matter, because and I want to give a shout out to both Mary Tinkler and Peter, because both of those offices have been very, very, very supportive of this dialogue and shared information with us that allowed me to speak with Anna Johnson, county council members, as well as council members about this issue, and particularly in the Mount Pleasant area. But I know it's happening more in just that area. But you add that value to this role, and you're familiar with that. So that's good. That's very good. I really appreciate that. Mike, now we know that you're coming up for an election in, what, a couple years maybe? Is this a four-year term?
Next November, yes.
Next November. Okay, so now let me go ahead and put it out there right now that you are going to run for this seat again.
I am planning on running again, yes.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Right here on the Jay Rice Show, we say things and get things done and get commitments. So I'm out there early, way before next year's election, on the Jay Rice Show with our registered D, Mike Miller, that he is going to rerun for that seat. We will get him reelected because we need him. Professor T-Base, are you in agreement with me here, sir?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have a question. I don't know if I ran out of the studio for a few minutes, so I don't know if you addressed this.
But is this
the Mike?
Mike,
I've given him a new name, man. I've given him the Professor T-Base. He's a Professor Radio for me, man.
I'll take it.
Is he the professor or is he an adjunct professor? Which one is it? I don't know.
Hey, whichever one gets me a discount at the barbershop.
You know what I got.
Oh, you're the man. But here's the question, and this is actually going on in my life through my, a challenge with my mother, just understanding probate. Does your office work a lot with probate? Because you're talking about property, you're talking about, you know, the, a lot of people don't understand that process, just like the deeds and, you know, what it all means. But do your, does your office have a lot of interaction with the probate? I guess it's the Office of Probate or the Probate Court.
No, we do not, not a lot. Typically, when there's issues like you may have with property that needs to be probated, once the probate process has taken place, a judge has been ruled on the status of the property, and then he should become, you know, the new owner of said property based on a judge ruling. That then orders are brought to my office, and then we can then record those documents.
Okay.
So it aligns with the judge's ruling. Okay. Outside of that, my office has very little interaction with the probate judge, with the probate court.
I kind of thought that. So you're sort of, once there's been something executed, then you just finish a process, or you make it, you record the process, more or less.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, correct. My office, we don't generate documents. We cannot alter documents. We cannot change documents. We simply record. We don't even, by law, guys, we're not even supposed to check the authenticity of the document.
Well,
by law.
By
so
law.
Typically, by law, we are not to, we are not the document police, is basically how they frame it or how they phrase it. So that's why I always encourage folks who are having issues with land to hire an attorney.
Right.
Because if you bring a document to my office and it meets the state standard for me to record it, by law, I can record it.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't mean that the document has been executed properly. It just means that it met the state standard for me to record it. And then once I get it recorded, I cannot remove it from its, from my role. I have to receive a court order to do that. And, of course, you know, then you'd have to hire another attorney. That costs tens of thousands of dollars to do that. So I always encourage people, even if the situation seems really simple, I always encourage people, please hire an attorney to help you with this transaction. I've had people come to my office to try to do it themselves. John and Terry, it met the state standard, but they filed it wrong.
Right.
They end up giving away more property than they wanted to.
Yeah.
And then they said, well, Mr. Miller, we need you to fix this. I said, I'm sorry. I'm, by law, I cannot.
Right, right, right.
All because they may not have had the resources to hire an attorney or couldn't afford an attorney or thought they could just do it themselves.
Well, you know, Mr. Registered Deed, Mike Miller, I want to thank you, man, for being on with us. You know, I'm so looking forward to 2022, and you heard it first right here on the Jay Rice Show. We are a political action committee for the re-elect Mike Miller Registered Deeds. It's going down right here on the Jay Rice Show. You heard it first. Thank you, sir, for your time. I appreciate what you're doing, and I look forward to working with you.
Hey, I need to, Jay, if I could say one more thing before I go. I know,
yes, sir.
You know, you have a huge listening audience. It's a gospel.
Millions,
station.
Millions of listeners on the Jay Rice.
Millions,
Show.
Like The Rock would say, millions and millions. I ask everybody who is a member of a church, a pastor of a church, or in church leadership. John, every time I go visit a church to speak, I always pull their deed and their plat for their church.
Outstanding.
I have yet to find a deed that I pulled for a church where the names on the deed are accurate.
Wow.
95% of the people who are on the church's deed are deceased or no longer attend the church. So I urge all of your listeners who are either pastors or in positions of leadership in their church, to, if your church is in Charleston County, to come to the office, pull the deed in the plat, and make sure that the person, like the pastor who's the current pastor, make sure his name is on the deed. The trustees, make sure their names are on the deed. Gentlemen, that information is extremely vital. Property in Charleston County is being bought and sold at an alarming rate, and I firmly believe they've almost consumed all of the housing market of Charleston County, but in particular the peninsula. You know what I believe is next? Our churches.
Absolutely.
Our churches
Absolutely.
Are vulnerable.
Yes, sir.
Extremely.
So please check those documents of your church. If you need help, please call me at my office, 958-4801. We will do all we can to assist you in those needs and concerns.
Mike, give that number again, please, sir, if you would.
So the office number, I'm going to give two. My office number is 843-958-4801. And I'm also going to give you my assistant, Michelle's number.
Okay.
Her number is 843-958-4802. And if there's anything that we can do to help and assist churches with their plat, their deeds, getting things somewhat kind of pointing you in the right direction, we're more than happy to do that.
Mike, that's powerful information, and and I want to keep you in 2022 and Michelle. Thank you so much, man, for being on with us
yes,
this morning, man. Take care. Enjoy the rest of the day. We'll be in touch, sir. We got to do this again.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
All right. That's our Charleston County Register of Deeds. Mike is in a good role. Mike is in a powerful position. And Mike just made a powerful statement to a community. This is WJNI 106.3. This is a gospel station. So we're talking to a church community. Or at least we're talking to a gospel community that may be a part of a church.
Yeah.
And that's powerful. 95% of the churches don't, their documents are not accurate. That is huge. Where else would we have gotten that information from if Mike didn't share with us? You know, a good friend of mine, Fred Lincoln, told me years ago when I first came home that he said that same thing, that a lot of churches did not belong to the congregations and the church, the members.
You know what that is? That's the beginning of church mess. That's where it starts.
Right.
And, you know, everyone's heard the term church mess. Well,
right.
if names are not accurate, and you can't be, that's the most vulnerable you can be.
Absolutely.
It starts right there, the church mess. So every church should be calling me all week. Say, man, we need that number.
That's right. That's right.
Every church.
And I'm going to post Mike's number to my Facebook page, the Jay Rice Facebook page, so we can get that. People can call up because we got to get Mike reelected, but we also got to address this issue.
Yeah.
I got to call online. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Rice Show.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, ma'am. You doing well?
Yes, I am. Thank God.
This is with me, Michelle Haywood Dunmire. Ma'am,
yes.
You are almost at the end of this journey. We want to thank you. I know you're running for that seat in the special election that's coming up on March 2nd in Hollywood. I've seen you out there, Michelle. Thank you. It takes a special person to run for office. What has it been like? Where are we? What do you need from us? What should people know?
I am here today just to inform the citizens of Hollywood that please come out on March the 2nd, which is Tuesday coming, and we'll be out there from 7 to 7 for voting. Just remember my name, Michelle Haywood Dunmire. It has been a journey. I've met lots of great people in Hollywood, and I've got some concerns from the people in Hollywood that when I am placed on the board on Tuesday, March the 2nd, that I will address with the board. So I just ask that the citizen of Hollywood to please come out and go ahead and vote. This is Black History Month, so please exercise your right to vote because people have already paved the way for us. So please come out on Tuesday, March the 2nd, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. We have three polling places out there, which is going to be C.C. Blaney Elementary School, Wide Awake Park, and the Hollywood Senior Center. So please come out and vote. Michelle Haywood Dunmire. Thank you.
Michelle Haywood Dunmire, I want to thank you, ma'am, for coming on because, you know, this is valuable because people hear your name and they know who this person is. They've heard from this person before, whether it's here on the radio or you've been out in the community. Now, we're not going to ask you for what your 100-day plan is. We're going to ask you for what your 10-year plan is for Hollywood because the goal is for you to get elected and then be there for about 10 years and make some changes because you have a valuable platform. You highlighted it when we were on it before. So we want you in that. We want to get you elected so 10 years from now we can look back and say, you know, we elected her first. We mentioned her first right here on the Jay Rice Show, and then she continued on the great work. So thank you, Michelle, for calling in. People, get out to vote March 2nd. Michelle Haywood Dunmire for Hollywood Council.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Any parting words, ma'am?
Parting words is just continue to pray for me that when I get on this board, then I can continue to work on my platform, which is public safety, broadband, and infrastructure with water and sewer out in the Hollywood area, and just to implement some other programs that was mentioned to me that that'll be very viable to the area. So just pray for me that when I am elected, that I can continue my journey.
That sounds like a 10-year comprehensive plan, Michelle. We'll go get you elected.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Enjoy the rest of your day. Y'all heard from her. Michelle has been out there working. Michelle is on the radio. Michelle is telling us that she wants to be elected. So let's get her elected. Got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Rice Show. Okay. Something happened with the caller. Nonetheless,
they hung up.
They hung up. But we'll get them back on. They'll call back because they want to talk. They want to talk. They want to talk about some of the issues that we're talking about. Always we're putting out good information and creating good, honest dialogue. So this is a platform, and it's designed for you. 843-308-9564. I got a text message last couple of days from the mayor and Mount Pleasant, Mayor Haney. And he was making me aware of an upcoming plan for a drive-through vaccination site in Mount Pleasant. So stay tuned to the Jay Wright Show and other media outlets if you so desire. But stay tuned because he's working on a real aggressive plan for a weekly drive-through vaccination at East Cooper Hospital. And that's in the works. It's being discussed. So just stay tuned. You will know more about it. But let's just say you heard her first here on the Jay Rice Show that's coming. Thank you, Mayor Haney, for all your work and those of Mount Pleasant at that hospital to even possibly make this possible. So that is in the works. Pay attention, and we'll talk more about it. But thank you again, sir, for making me aware of that so I can make the millions and millions of listeners aware of it. Good morning, caller. Welcome to WJNI 106.3. You're on the Jay Rice Show.
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, John, right?
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Fine, and you? I feel like as far as, you know, like this bill on this woman's body is sacred, man. You know, they shouldn't even, like pass something, you know, like I could do this for your body or whatnot. You know, this is what I want you to do and such, you know what I mean? Body or woman's sacred. She should make her own decisions how her body should be handled. You know, and far as the hate crime bill is concerned, why don't they have a protection bill? You know what I mean?
Right.
The hate is going to keep on hating regardless. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. Have a protection bill, you know? And then you talked about the minimum wage.
But let me ask you a quick question. You say a protection bill. Are you talking about protect? The citizens are protect. Well, obviously you're talking
protect
about the citizens,
protect
right?
The citizens, right? You know what I mean? And
okay.
You know, like, because the haters gonna keep hating regardless.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, have a bill to protect the people. You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's what they should have. You know, and for us, minimum wage, it should be what, 15%. You know what I mean? With prices, everything going high and high each day, you know what I mean? And then people got families. Hey, it's only a drop in the bucket, really. You know what I mean? Hey, you know.
Okay.
Give them this.
Okay.
That's all I got to say, really. So have a blessed day.
I thank you, man, for chiming in. And, we got to address those issues and we got to discuss them. So I thank you. Appreciate you for calling in. We cannot, you know, whether we agree and or disagree with that $15 minimum wage, one thing we can agree on is that the cost of living is going up every day. Every day. Now, I think the challenge with that, and I know for a fact, at least I don't know anything, but I know some things on a couple days a week, Mondays and Thursdays at least, that that I don't know how you manage the private sector as it relates to cost of living increase. I think that in itself is just as much a challenge as it is the $15 an hour, because private sector is who ultimately is pushing back against that as well. So then if they're pushing back against $15 an hour, how do we get them to address the cost of living increase that we're seeing every day? So so there's challenges, but how do we meet those? And I guarantee you one way we meet them is through discussions and through dialogue and engaging our elected officials in such a manner in which when we talk about the $15 an hour, we then also compound that with the cost of living. You know, some people get them. You know, if you're government employees, some people get that cost of living increase. So how do we measure that?
Let me ask you this, sir. If the cost of living is variable, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's measured somehow, some way. They have a science to it. And I don't know if it goes up every year. I'm sure maybe there's some years does it stay flat. Does it, it recedes a little bit or, you know, but it varies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't you have a wage, a minimum wage? Because obviously a minimum wage was created because somewhere along the line, post-slavery, somebody determined, well, this is the least we can pay somebody, and it be not be slavery, you know, it not be indentured servitude. This is the lowest we can pay somebody,
right,
and feel like we can go to sleep at night.
Right.
But why couldn't we have common sense be put in the equation? Because to go from the current minimum wage is $7.75. I don't even know what it is.
$7.25, something like that. Somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
Right.
Somebody out there calling. What is the current minimum wage?
Mm-hmm.
But if it's $7.50, well, if gas went from $2 to $4, everybody'd be upset, right?
Right.
If the cost of a hamburger went from $1.50 to $3, people would be upset.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand an employer, and this is straight from people that have employees.
Right.
You know what they're saying? If y'all double it, I gotta fire people.
Right.
So I agree with them as it relates to you can't go from this to that.
Right.
But common sense could say, well, you know, let's look at the economics. Let's look at the factors that comes up with what they've come up with as far as cost of living. And maybe you start at $10.
Right.
Common sense.
Right.
And then say, you know what? Every 2 years, we're going to go a dollar up till we get to 15. Now, who can disagree with that? That gives everybody time to adjust. You don't have to go fire half your staff because you have to pay them, because all you did was, it's like you added a person.
Right, right.
You know, but we can never settle in this country on common sensibilities to get to our goals. And that's frustrating, the way I see it.
Professor T-Base, you're dead on, and this is why this platform is valuable for us to have this conversation and discussion, sir. Because number one, I think the conversation needs to be had about the cost of living increase. But as you indicated, where is that conversation about, and I think I've heard some, about the gradual increase, because that sounds better, and the private sector can kind of get behind that if we're talking about gradual increase to kind of get to where we are, because without the discussion of the cost of living and the minimum wage together, then it's tough to, you know, to get folks on board. So we think, you know, I think it's only important and valuable that we add the cost of living increase into that dialogue, you know, just as much.
The current minimum wage is $7.25.
Oh, yeah, by all
an
means.
Hour. So.
By all means. So we need to, you know, let's look at the cost of living increase. Let's look at over the last five years, how much eggs, what eggs cost in 2015 and now what they cost now. You know, we know we dealt with some tariffs this last election administration. So, you know, things have changed. So when we talk cost of living and talk $15 minimum wage, there's got to be the cost of living has got to be a part of that dialogue, because I think it's only add value to what's being asked. But again, a gradual increase should also be heavily on the table.
When I was a young man and the drinking age was 18,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they said, "Hey, we're going to take it to 21," and at that time, I was 17.
Right.
And I was looking forward to a cold one.
Right.
At the time. Because I was 17.
Right. That's right.
Getting ready to go to college.
Uh-huh.
All that good stuff, right?
Right.
Then they say, "Hey, wait a minute, we're going to change it." Mm-hmm. But guess what? They didn't go from 18 to 21. You know what they did? They went from 18 to 19.
Right.
Then the next year, 19 to 20.
Right.
The next year, 20 to 21.
Gradually got there.
And because my birthday is in January, you know what happened for 3 years?
Right.
For 25 days, I couldn't drink. Every year for 3 years.
That's
because
right.
Because my birthday, my age was lined up with the increase.
Mm-hmm.
Now, don't ask me if I cheated. But it happened then. If they can do it with alcohol.
Right.
Why can't they do it with people's wages?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's unique because we do it often and we have done it. And there are models out there. There are examples out there on how to do it. We just need to copy and paste and stop making it complicated. We just need to copy and paste the models, look at them, find exactly how we fit in, and we get in. Now, it's funny that we're talking about this conversation, right? Just yesterday, I was having a conversation with a good old friend of mine, Fred Lincoln. And we were talking about information and how we get information. And, you know, I think it's become very apparent to me in my return home that we have a segment of society that don't want information from certain individuals. That's it's very apparent in my return. And I often call my return home the migration back to the South, because I come back here with all this little bit of experience, a little bit of exposure. And I find that Fred is exactly right. Fred Lincoln is an old wise fella. He likes me because he's a lot older than I am. And, you know, I'm energy and he's wisdom. So we talked, and we talk often, and it's very apparent, and I don't know why that's the case. So how do we address that? And Fred was talking about how his effort to influence, or at least not influence, I'm sorry, to have dialogue with folks in the Canoy community off of Clemens Ferry Road, which you know is, and I know is becoming a little city. So he was talking about land use and what to do and how we should do it and some of the new methods and ideas around that. But what, again, the bottom line came back to is that it all depends on who you are. And if you're trying to share information with a certain segment of society, they only want it from a certain individual. They don't want it from everybody. So in other words, let's just put this out there. Example. I wanted to share something with let's do it in reverse. Let's say the Professor T-Base wanted to share something with Jay Wright. Professor T-Base looks just like me. he tells me, and I say, that don't sound right, Professor T-Base. Mm-hmm. And then somebody else that don't look like Professor T-Base come to Jay Wright and says, Jay Wright, this is that. This is that. And I say, really? I just did exactly what I was trying to give an example of. T-Base was giving me the same information, but it just didn't sound right coming from him. We have a problem with that.
Oh, that's a big problem.
We got to fix that.
Well, it's everybody should do their due diligence to distinguish between racism and prejudice. They're not the right. same thing,
mm-hmm.
though they interweave, they interact with one another. But what you're talking about is so historic, and it goes back to a word you've used on the show, bias.
That's right.
It's baked in.
That's right.
So if you can take the vanilla extract out of a cake after it's been baked,
mm-hmm.
please show me how you did it. Because
right.
racism is the cake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Prejudice is baked in, and hate is an ingredient, and mm-hmm. all these things that we're trying to extract,
right.
pun intended.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in 2021, what you said is valid. A black person could walk in a doctor's office because of what they've been told and historically how we've been treated,
mm-hmm.
and what has been said about black doctors, that a black person could walk in a doctor's office, see a black doctor, and not want to be served because of a baked in mentality. Whereas a doctor's a doctor. They got the white coat on and the stethoscope. They have proven that they're a doctor.
Absolutely.
But that's our problem in every area. Because I said it,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't valid.
Right.
But because he said it.
Right.
And he looks different.
Right. Validity.
It's got to be. No, I believe it now because he said it.
Right. See.
That's the problem, that we need to have an 8-hour conversation every day.
Absolutely. It's nonsense, right? Not only is it nonsense.
It's so baked in, though.
Right. It's baked in. Even in the pandemic, right, and as historical as this pandemic will go down as, if it did not bring people together, maybe unity is just not meant to be.
Yeah.
So if it has not, then just stay wherever you are, do whatever you're doing. Maybe it's just not meant to be.
A quick 10-second example. I coached my children's soccer team many years ago. They needed a coach.
Right.
I never coached soccer. I coached other sports. When I came and showed up for the meeting, I could feel the parents that most of the kids on the team didn't look like me or my
right.
children.
Right.
I had to win them over.
Absolutely.
Over the course of 2 or 3 practices, games. By the end of the season, they love me. But the first day, wait a minute, this is the coach.
Listen, it speaks value. It speaks value to what you're saying. And, you know, as always, I want to thank my sponsors, Dorothy Funeral Home, Ask You Paint and Body Shop, F. Brisbane Mortuary Transport, Gyrus Place in Charlotte, North Carolina, Johnson Hall Funeral Home, Hannibal's Kitchen. I want to hear from them with a weekly special. Family Seafood Market. Go get you some crabs and some shrimp there. And VIP Bistro, 616 Meeting Street. Go by there. Tell them you heard it on the Jay Wright Show, and they'll give you a little discount. If they don't give you a discount, call me. I'll call them. But thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to bring the information to you. We look forward to next week. And everybody that heard Mike Miller, our registered deeds on today, get that number, call over there, get your church in order, get your deed issues in order. Thank you so much. Next week. Peace. 106.3 WJNI.